I present the prophet of the Almighty Baller.
Prophet of the Almighty Baller speaking, welcoming you to episode 19, Tariq Black to the Future, part 2. Where we last left off, we're starting to get into the finer details of how this Lakers squad will look going forward. We had just started talking about Brandon Ingram. This episode, we talk about a lot of stuff, a lot of basketball stuff, a lot of wrestling stuff, a lot of stuff. It's a pretty fun episode. I think you'll enjoy it. So thanks for listening. This is Almighty Ballin, the Almighty Podcast. Find the Prophet on Facebook as Prof of Ball. Send me a friend request. Find the Prophet on Twitter at Almighty Prophet. There's articles, podcasts, and more on almightyballer.com. If you're listening to this on iTunes, please consider leaving a 5-star review saying some nice things about the podcast and what you liked. And if you're listening on my website, drop by the comments section, say what's up, and I might get back to you. So with all that said, I hope you enjoy this episode, and thanks again for listening.
But this team full of five, you know, hyperactive Gumby-looking type, like, I really want that.
Yeah, yeah, well, right? Yeah. Especially if that has talent. Because, you know, we say the Bucks, but really what you would shoot for is the Thunder, right? Because, like, the Thunder are big. Yeah. You know, the Thunder are, there is no small ball rotation, because if you put Serge Ibaka at the five, you have a 6'10" center, which is about average at this point, and Kevin Durant is a 7-footer, and Andre Roberson...
Yeah, he's actually 7'11", he just keeps lying.
7'11". Seven even backdoor
He's taller than Sean Bradley in reality, yeah.
He actually is Sean Bradley.
You ever see him together?
Yeah, he snuck back into the league.
He did, yeah, he did a Black Like Me
Wiley
thing.
Wiley as Sean Bradley. You know, Sean Bradley was good. Do you know that?
Yeah, dude, the Aliens in Space Jam stole his talent. He was good enough to be one of them.
People don't remember the Mavs that had Michael Finley when he was averaging like 22 points a game were a 60-win team, and Sean Bradley was the starting center there, and he was good. He was okay. Anyways, now he's on the Lakers, or now he's on the Thunder, and he's one of the best scorers in the game, so like... I'm okay with Sean Bradley. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really reinvented his game.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy for him.
But they prioritize, if I'm following you correctly, you're talking about a team that can afford to, that can put big guys out there and play the sort of the kind of character of a traditionally a small ball approach to the game, you know, relying on closeouts and trap and stuff like that. But they also are huge.
Big players, but, you know, welterweight ball, right? Like medium small ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I could see that.
So... you started to direct us towards the future, and I've sort of been wanting that.
Yeah, because I don't want to talk about Robert Sacrave very much longer.
Right. Oh, God. Let's agree. He looks a little bit like Voldemort.
Actually, I kind of like him as a person. Yeah. We don't have beef with Robert.
He looks enough like Voldemort. Can we call him He Who Must Not Be Named? Because I don't want to say Robert Sacre again. Sacre. Robert Sacre Bleu.
Big Sack? I'm going to call him Big Sack. Yeah.
The Big Sack.
Bobby Fat Sacks.
Yeah, isn't?
Yeah.
Bob Sack. That's good.
Sacks Machine. Yeah, we got all kinds of things here. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It'll solve itself. Yeah. It'll solve itself.
We've already talked about him a little too long. Yeah, because I don't want to talk about Robert Sacre.
Yeah, but I realized that sounded sort of cold.
And then we talk about
I like him. I like that video on YouTube that's just him cheering for other people on his team from the bench.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love the energy.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's a character guy, and I'm fine with that, you know?
Yeah.
I would prefer having players like that who have some shred of talent. Leandro Barbosa is such a great locker room guy because he's sort of a mentor, and he has this thing where, like, he knows English, but it isn't his first language, so if he says something that sort of rubs people the wrong way, you can just pass it off. You know, players don't take it personally. They don't misconstrue things that he says because of that, you know? And he doesn't say things that are actively trying to hurt people's feelings. And he's not terrible. Leandro Barbosa at this point is all right. That's really the type of players who I'd like to see on the Lakers. Players who are like...
I want Andre Miller on every team, but I want Andre Miller on this team too.
Yeah. Surely Andre Miller's genetic composition is not all that more complex than, say, a sheep. So... I feel like we could clone him.
He's so old that he kind of represents a bridge between the crustacean and the mammal.
Yeah, he's like, he plays.
And he would be so not the right kind. I mean, I don't know, I guess maybe what kind of second unit would be with him just sort of rumbling up the court with all of these, you know, gangly kids sort of dancing around him, like the Wicker Man.
So let's talk. We still haven't talked about
that
the
kid. That kid from that Ingram kid, though. Have you watched? I don't follow college ball really very much, but I was watching some of his draft scouting reports and draft workouts, and not draft workouts, but scouting reports and stuff. Almost part of me really wants to see that kid get onto this hypothetical Lakers team because it would be fun. But the other part of me is worried that they're going to mishandle his development, and I really want there to be a league future where this guy develops into a player, because right now he's
well, I think the consensus is Byron Scott doesn't make it past this year, right?
Yeah, but okay, if the Lakers are really dumb, if they're really dumb, which is a total possibility, then they're gonna fuck up. It's like they're gonna go from Byron Scott to like, oh God, what if they sign Mark Jackson?
I was going
to
say Mark Jackson was the one.
What if they sign Mark Jackson? What if that was a thing?
You can make an argument that they get Mark Jackson. It's awful, but Mark Jackson is one of those guys you were talking about earlier that a lot of players hate him, obviously, and he's kind of poisonous. But at the same time, you know, there always are coaches in whatever sport that tend to be the coach of the team before it gets good.
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of guys.
Scott.
So, you know, Buck Showalter is the example in baseball. That guy coaches people before they get good. But regardless, let's try to be a little bit more optimistic here and say that they poach Luke Walton away or something like that.
I think it's within the realm of possibility, though, that the Lakers really don't know what they're doing whatsoever.
Good Lord.
Okay, but, you know, the reason
this kid is 6'9 with a 7'4 wingspan, though, man.
Are we talking about Ingram?
Yeah, I just want to just, you know, while we're on the subject, and then we'll come back to it, I guess, because this is an NBA podcast, is that, you know, and the kid has so many physical tools, and
he's got a good jumper.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a really good jumper.
So, in the worst possible world, Brandon Ingram develops and turns into, skill-wise, Evan Turner, but on-court personality-wise, Corey Brewer. That's, you know, a sixth man quality player, and that's the very worst possible thing besides him having, you know, an injury to the extent
that... If he doesn't eat his, you know, Wheaties, he might actually just break in half out there.
Well, Corey Brewer's 6'9", and, you know, totally a lightweight. That's why I sort of chose him.
This kid makes Tayshaun Prince look like Chuck Hayes, though.
Yeah. There was a world where Chuck Hayes, hey... That's a blast from the past.
Chuck Hayes. Big fan of Chuck Hayes. Shouts out to you, Chuck, if you're a listener.
Remember when we used to reference Chuck Hayes in every podcast?
Yeah, I still want to reference Chuck Hayes in every podcast. I have.
Yeah, what happened to Kendrick Perkins?
Yeah.
And DJ Mabanga, too.
Oh, we got major love for, at least I do, for Perk as well. Shouts
out.
It pains my heart when people disparage the name of Kendrick Perkins. Good guy. A good guy.
Yeah, dude, he's my favorite aquatic mammal.
Huh? Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, marine mammal.
Hey, guys, I do hope that we talk about the future, but I'm totally okay that we've sort of been bullshitting around. I was talking to Spencer the other day, but I do want it to be a smart podcast, but I also just sort of want to bullshit around, you know? So
I'm good at that, so...
Anyways,
I'm not good at the other stuff.
Yeah.
Yo, I have a quick basketball question.
Yeah.
Concerning the Lakers of Los Angeles. D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson their backcourt going forward in this rebuild? Starting backcourt. Is that set? Are they good to go with that?
Okay, so, Spencer, do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I think that the thing that people have been scared about, and it's, you know, been raised, the point's been raised by a lot of people who watch a lot more Lakers basketball than I do, that this might end up being a Monte Ellis situation with Clarkson. And see, to me, I think that should that happen, that would be a blessing in disguise, because there could be a trade piece so that they could, you know, work on...
Right, because
right now they've got, you know, it's another roster wherein, you know, the talent is not evenly distributed in such a way that you could have a team that it's kind of lumpy. I don't know if you will. They have a lot of distension. They have a glut of talent of players in the backcourt, and they're missing whatever. So I think that that's possible. But yeah, I think that that's the worst case scenario, is that he ends up being a Monte Ellis type.
Well,
which is, yeah. I love Monte. Monte have it all. We like Monte. But, you know, not with Russell. If that wouldn't jive together very well.
As some team that doesn't have high aspirations will get a Monte Ellis type player. Yeah, so I agree. You know, but then it sort of begs the question, the Warriors didn't let Monte Ellis walk. They traded Monte Ellis to the Bucks.
For Bogut and for Jackson.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if that's the nightmare scenario, then, you know, that's a pretty weak nightmare.
Well, yeah, it's a weak nightmare because, again, if you have that situation and you have a front office like Golden State for the last couple of years, then it's like the team was much better for it. However, you know, you don't want them to. I see that there's a possible scenario where they don't do anything that smart and instead do something much dumber than that. That, you know, it's just, it has to be sort of factored into any kind of long projectional analysis of this team is the threat of stupidity.
Yeah. I'm really concerned. So, I think we need to...
I think a good working model...
I think we need to talk about Jeannie Buss at some point, but Kunal, carry on.
Well, just on that backcourt, I think a good working model for them is actually what's happening in Portland right now, which is a team that also I think we should talk about at some point, because they've got some interesting stuff cooking up. But with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, both are pretty, I wouldn't say dependent, but they operate best with the ball in their hands. And I think that, you know... Just because Clarkson and Russell both need the ball in their hands, you know, being able to spread the floor, swing it around, and run pick and rolls and counters constantly is a really good game plan. Just as you were saying, Spencer, depends on if they actually know what they're doing.
The thing is, the people are like, well, you don't want two ball dominant guards in a starting lineup or sort of be key pieces of a team, pointing to things like the Houston Rockets. But the thing is, that's just not really true. Right? You can do that well. And Spurs is like the obvious example, but we should try to think of a more nuanced thing. Leandro Barbosa, Steve Nash. Stephon Marbury.
I think that.
Steve Francis.
To that point, because I feel like that was partially directed at some of the stuff that I've been sort of parroting all the entire life and breadth of this podcast, and even outside of it, is that I keep complaining about the whole two ball. And I think that, too, because I was talking about it specifically with the reference to Dallas, but I think that, you know, the formula ought to be you can have two ball-dominant guards as long as they have enough, you know, like, there are other mitigating factors in their skill set.
Right.
You know, like being able to, for instance, you know, like Curry moves without the ball, you know, you watch Curry when he doesn't have the ball in his hands and then watch Rondo, you know. There's a difference between, you know, kind of swimming through defenses like an otter, and that's actually is kind of what he's like now that I think about it. He looks like an otter. Like when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, whereas Rondo just sort of stands there and you know, checks his Twitter feed. And I think that
it makes disparaging comments about minority groups.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. And I think that, you know,
he's a horrible person.
Yeah.
He's like a really bad human being. And I generally withhold remarks like that.
No, you leave those for me.
I generally withhold character judgments on celebrities because I think people go overboard. But I can say observably Rondo's such a bad human being. I have enough empirical evidence to run with that monologue. So, anyways, yeah, well...
Because Monte's issue is that he couldn't spot up either, so he couldn't even do that without the ball.
Yeah,
so well, I think that... Well, he learned how to... I mean, he got better, but he couldn't at the time with Golden State.
The thing is if any player can succeed in being that ball-dominant guard and having that ball-handler sort of offense-running skill set, but capitalizing on their other guard abilities so that they're not being too Rondo-y, right? It's D'Angelo Russell, and he absolutely has the court vision and the selflessness and the jump shot to do that. The narrative...
problem is, it's been Clarkson has been the question, though.
Right.
It's like, is that if Clarkson is going to be a guy who scores for you really, really, really well, but needs, you know, I mean, yeah, like you said, it's you have to thread a needle because it's very difficult to be able to get a guy like that to be worked fruitfully and productively into the rotation without without leaning on him becoming, on the one hand, a spot shooter, on the other hand, having him have the ball. It's hard to utilize both those talents, and I think that, you know, obviously whoever replaces Scott will have to do a lot better job than he did, than Scott does.
Or Kevin McHale did. Or Bernie Bickerstaff is currently doing.
Little Bickerstaff.
Yeah, yeah.
Professor of Charms, so, Bernie Bickerstaff.
So I agree. I totally... Professor of Potions and Knickknacks at Hogwarts, Bickerstaff.
I think he's Gnome Theory.
Gnome Theory. That's why he's working in close proximity to Daryl Morey.
yeah.
He's trying to get into the mind of Daryl Morey, well-known gnome. Well-known... Mm-hmm.
Infamous gnome.
Yeah, right?
Perhaps one of the most visible.
So, the two ball-dominant player thing, we've sort of talked about the Thunder a few times, and the thing is the person playing the classic, what is generally the small forward role, is Andre Roberson, and taking up secondary ball duties instead of the shooting guard is Kevin Durant. And, you know, Russell and Kevin Durant, regardless of what dumb people think, is good. That works. It really is up to Jordan Clarkson. And I don't know. I could see him being sort of Reggie Jackson-y to run with the Thunder again and sort of demanding a bigger role. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's sort of Lance Stephenson while he was on the Pacers. Sort of.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sort of like functionally, I mean, with a totally different skill set, but sort of using in the open court that ball handling skill, right? But generally reserving ball handling duties to the more apt and more selfless player. So we talked about the two possibilities, but what do you think is going to happen insofar as that's concerned? Do you like Jordan Clarkson going forward? Do you think that he, given the opportunity, would take it back a couple notches?
I think he wouldn't. I think D'Angelo Russell has the passing ability to make that work really well. I think that, you know,
yeah,
Jordan Clarkson, he's cooled off a lot since he got his ankle injured. But he opened the year shooting, I think it was like 44% from three and higher on spot ups, or on catch and shoot, sorry.
Uh-huh.
Like, he definitely has the skill set to make it happen. The biggest concern with Clarkson with me is defensively. That kid can't stop anything. I almost feel like he is single-handedly responsible for the reason Roy Hibbert's house in LA is about to get burned down. But also with Russell's wingspan, they can switch that up and make that work. And it's definitely in Clarkson's best interest to make that work.
I think that Jordan Clarkson is so athletic, and he is, you know, he's 6'5", and I think that he can totally be developed into a workable defensive player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm only concerned about that going forward if it already comes to pass that he's not willing to work as part of a team. If he can't develop into a good defensive player, then it is already the case that he is not going to be able to work into the type of system that the Lakers should want going forward. So, yeah, that's not so much of a concern to me.
What do you see with this Brown guy that we haven't talked about, the kid from Stanford, that wing that they have? What do you see his sort of ceiling at? Because from what I can tell, again, I haven't watched a lot of his play, also because he hasn't been getting enough minutes.
Yeah.
He's been playing for the last 2 weeks due to some of those injuries out there. From what I understand about him, Scott's already called him the best on-ball perimeter defender on the team, and I did watch some of his play at Stanford. And he was at the time, at least a good three shooter. I'm wondering if there's some sort of futures lineup or couple of lineups where Clarkson can be kind of hidden on defense. I don't know. I think that this kid, best case scenario, could be developed into a kind of Diet Iguodala figure, you know? I don't know how he is above the rim, but just in terms of the fact that he's being that good 3-and-D guy, you know, that guy.
And see, more so than Iguodala, I would think Danny Green.
Yeah.
Whereas it's going to take him a while to develop that skill set of not just straight catch and shoot.
Yeah. I think that would be a more felicitous bird.
Yeah.
How big is Brownless?
He's like 6'7"-ish.
Yeah, so, okay, that's 6'8". What it's...
He's like 2'3", something around there.
What do you think about him?
But yeah, I mean, to me, this is the most frustrating part about the whole Lakers fake, failed, whatever rebuild, is you don't know anything about these young players that you just picked up. Like, you don't know what they're capable of, where they specifically really, really need to improve based on game data. just because none of them are getting enough minutes.
Yeah.
And that's got to be somewhat damaging to their development. I mean, especially in these early parts.
Yeah, they need to be, because the more time that they spend not doing that, I mean, the more time they'll have to devote, you know, they're cutting into the time that they have to do this later, I guess. I can't understand. I can't get into the mindset of that organization or its fans, because the Lakers have never had any particular importance to me except as being annoying growing up as a Dallas Mavs fan. But is Kobe's farewell tour this important that this team is just manifestly shooting itself in the foot to this degree? I mean, I know the money is there, but this is still a city and a team that cares about winning.
Yeah,
in a way that I can't imagine that they would allow them to just shoot themselves like this.
Just really quick, let me jump in and say about Brown. I think that his ceiling is Trevor Ariza and his floor is Andre Roberson. So I'm not... And I think that in all likelihood, it will be more like Andre Roberson, but he's also just not that athletic. So, like, I don't really see him honestly think that he has a place on... I don't think that he can play any more than, like, 8 minutes on a team that's contending, personally.
All right. Well, he's not going to be on a team that's contending, ostensibly, for the next... So that's not really a concern. So I'm just saying that, you know, why not try to do some sort of spaghetti on the wall method here and just try to see... I mean, you've got this guy just sitting around. I mean...
Right.
And his physical tools are something that, you know, everybody knows at least that he's a good perimeter defender.
Yeah.
There are a lot of those, and they tend to be highly valuable trade pieces, Byron. So why don't you just give this guy a shot?
Yeah, it's like the same thing...
Yeah, well, and I mean, we started... And,
it's like the same thing with Tarik Black, right?
Yeah.
At least find out if there's value for these guys as trade chips. If, you know, some team that really needs a 3 and D guy is like, well, you know, there's this Brown kid over at the Lakers who's a rookie shooting okay and defending pretty well in the perimeter. Why not take a shot on it?
Yeah, well, a player like that is often the little extra incentive, sort of like the second round draft pick, right? That gets thrown in to sweeten the deal that makes it happen rather than not happen.
Jay Crowder kind of guy?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, Crowder's value is probably higher than
Crowder's. Crowder is great. Crowder's really
higher
good.
Than this, higher than Brown. Yeah, Crowder is great, but I just, that was what kind of what he was doing in the Rondo trade, I think, is like...
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, and the other team, the Celtics in this scenario, would be trading with the hopes that he would be someone like Crowder, that he was in a position on the Lakers that they weren't fully utilizing his talents, and they would be trading for Brown with the hopes that he would be Jay Crowder. I'm saying that he won't be as good as Jay Crowder, but that's what the other team would be hoping in a trade like that.
That makes it a lot clearer. Thank you.
So, yeah.
Jay Crowder, we're a fan of yours over here as well.
I love Crowder. But his hair looks so heavy, you know? I don't see how he plays with that.
Mm. Well, if he comes on the show, we can ask.
I think he's on the line right now. Crowder, you there?
Please don't do a voice.
Hey, guys. Oh, so...
Okay. So...
So, yeah, the spaghetti on the wall thing, it's like... You know,
you have the freedom to do that right now.
It's sort of like we were saying with Robert Upshaw. Why not?
Upshaw's still on their D-League team, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And with Upshaw, I think it's like
they waived him, but then
character they got issue or something like that.
Well, he has.
People don't like Robert Upshaw.
Yeah,
he got kicked off of two college teams, but they still signed him, waived him, and signed him again. So
yeah, that's the thing, is he has potential to be such a... You know, a center like that is a little bit outdated, but it has a place. He has potential to be, like, a souped-up version of Bogdanovich, and that's great. You know, you get that coming 15, 20 minutes off the bench if you're utilizing it well. Bogdanovich's plus-minuses are amazing, and the Spurs are utilizing Bogdanovich so well. If Upshaw could sort of be like that, that'd be so useful.
And to our point earlier about what centers are going to be doing going forward in the league, and we talked about the pick and roll defense being basically, you know, what used to be rim protection as increasingly pick and roll. I mean, that guy's body is big, but he's not, you know, iron footed and he's long. I didn't watch a lot of his play, but I could see at least that he seems to fit the profile for the kind of style of basketball that we were sort of hopefully talking about as a hopeful possibility earlier in the podcast. You know, he's got huge hands and long arms, which is basically like, yes, that's what everybody wants in their basketball players. But
I think he's too clunky to ever be that, but even if you are playing...
And for 15 minutes a game, a 7-footer who's,
right,
you know...
Exactly. Yeah.
Is No, you're not going to pass, you know, turn your nose up at that, especially when he comes this cheap.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. He doesn't fit into the small ball lineup, but he could be a very useful piece on a small ball team, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, Bogut isn't part of the death lineup, but he's still a really important part of that team.
Absolutely. That's my reasoning. You guys are on my wavelength. What are you guys doing later?
I'm going to drink a lot and watch the debate.
Is there a debate tonight?
There was a debate last night.
And
I watched most of the Republican one from a couple days ago. That was just fun. That's fun. That's just a fun time.
How are those? I feel like they're just mad entertaining.
The Cruz Trump drama was just like, I don't know. You can't just get angry. You have to sort of make it fun and interesting for yourself. But I like watching professional wrestling. I don't watch it a lot, but I...
Okay.
Oh my god. Was I talking to you yesterday?
Huh?
Was I talking to you guys yesterday about Chris Christie should be in the WWE?
No, but that's a good idea.
Is Donald Trump the Undertaker?
I was talking to someone yesterday saying Chris Christie should be in the WWE.
I want
to
see Huckabee and Christie fight each other so fucking bad. How fucking awesome a fight. That would be a good fight, man.
The Deacon.
Yeah, you know that both of them, like, Christie would probably pull out a bike chain from his back pocket.
Yeah, Jersey boy.
And, yeah, no, my goal is for, and it would never happen, is for Christie to be, like, served with papers on a live debate stage. Like, every day that he, you know, is still on the campaign trail and he's not indicted is a borrowed day. That guy is gonna go to jail at some point.
What would he be served for?
Because he's mobbed up as fuck and engages in all kinds of shady, you know, I don't want to use the loaded word. He comports himself like a typical New Jersey fucking governor, you know?
He is Tony Soprano.
Well, yeah, he also put...
You don't know who I paid off to get here.
Wait, what?
He put a bunch of people in prison for life on evidence that was based in entrapment, too, which is sort of fucked up, but very fucked up, but...
Yeah, well,
there's a
Chris
whole...
Christie doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy who would probably have your kids followed home from school.
What about...
You know? That's kind of his political personality.
What about a tag team duo of Rand Paul and Ron Paul?
Nah, man. Rand Paul and Ron Paul, maybe if it was like... No, actually, how about Rand Paul and Dennis Kucinich up against Carly the Bird Fiorina and, like, and who else has got some length over there?
Trump. Dude, Trump is basically McMahon.
No, Trump and Bush have the best matchup each
year. You know, Trump has been on WWE. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. I did know that. But yeah, Trump and Bush physically line up the best against each other. They're both the tallest guys out there. Bush, I think Bush would be good in a fight. I'm pretty sure that he grew up, you know, beating the shit out of Marvin and George, you know, for fun with a piece of...
Jeb?
Like a,
are you talking about
like
Jeb?
Like a corroded... Yeah, Jeb.
Dude,
Jeb,
no, Jeb was the youngest.
Jeb looks mild-mannered, but I'd be willing to bet that Jeb has probably scratched out somebody's eyes before.
Dude, Jeb... No, it's my impression that Jeb always got picked on. He seems like the Bush...
Yeah, what else toughens you up? That toughens you up.
Yeah, he's got all that pent up...
Oh, dude, then he's got hidden anger and resentment. This is perfect.
Yeah, he's got all that pent up. I forgot what I was... Oh, yeah. Dick Cheney, right? Oh, okay. Couple thoughts. George Bush as John Cena and Dick Cheney as just the villain. Like, who's that guy?
The heel, yeah.
Who's that guy? The guy who's, like, sort of Samoan and has the dreadlocks and stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, shit. I haven't watched it in forever. I don't have a TV anymore. I just used to watch it.
He's like, crack a doa. Yeah, or like, you know, sort of Dick Cheney being the Thing, right? With Mr. Fantastic or whatever being George Bush, Rand Paul being the fire guy.
No, I think
the
like
invisible
Rand Paul's,
guy being Jeb Bush.
Rand Paul's personality would be like Rey Mysterio in the ring. I think he's like they both are about the same size. I feel like Rand Paul probably like Rand Paul looks like the kind of guy who's probably bitten another person in a fight without them knowing it.
Rand Paul should be selling car insurance.
No, I wouldn't. He's not nearly like, he's way too abrasive for it. I think he's got pretty much the right job for him. I would say maybe a dentist, but he just looks like he's unpleasant. Like, he just looks like, he doesn't seem to really try to be likable. He's like Santorum that way. Santorum always looks like he has a fucking headache.
I don't know. I sort of think that Rand Paul is likable. But hey, guys, speaking of likable.
Likable?
The Lakers, right?
Potentially at some point in the future.
Yeah.
Head coach. Ron Artest, bam, next question.
Oh, God, what the f***? fuck is up with Ron Artest? Oh my god.
I would watch every single game.
You know, call me a genius now because I am. And because that's gotta have that, if that happens.
Dude.
This is a 70 win team.
Yo, you guys know when coaches sometimes get a little too far onto the court and smart players like Jason Kidd will try to bump into him to get a tech? I'm just imagining somebody doing that to Ron Artest and him just decking the shit out of him.
Oh my god, speaking of WWE.
Yeah, I know. He also has a rap album. Yeah, he has a rap album too.
Ron Artest was on WWE. Speaking of
we
WWE.
We should do a podcast where we rank NBA players' rap albums.
Rank what?
Because I could come up, like, Tony Parker has one. Allen Iverson has one. Kobe has one. Shaq has one. Ron Artest
Iman
has
Shumpert,
one.
Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard did an MLK rap.
No, who else has?
He released today.
Oh, Steve Francis, fucking
Shumpert, Iman Shumpert.
Yeah, I already said Shumpert.
But no, Steve Francis. After if you've seen him now, you know he looks like a withered hobbit. He looks like an onion that's been left on the porch for too long at this point. The poor guy. But there's a video for one of his rap tracks. You can find it if you really are interested.
I'm pretty sure there was a video of Steve Francis on YouTube eating Vaseline and crying. It might have been Stephon Marbury though.
Marbury, he's got a rap bomb too.
Okay,
yeah.
So. I wrote down, what do you guys...
Monte does too, I think.
What do you think...
Hey, go ahead, sorry.
What do you think about going for... do you think the Timberwolves would unload Shabazz Muhammad? Do you think the Lakers could target Shabazz?
I think they should target him if he's open, if they're willing to discuss that, just because they need to be in talent accumulation mode. Anyone who might be a player needs to come play for the Lakers.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I mean, yeah, no, I stand by that. I was about to say, you know, he is... I think at his best as a power forward, Shabazz, and they're pretty loaded with youth at that position.
I'm not sure if that's the case. He hasn't really had enough on-floor time, but yeah, maybe. So we were talking about the idea that we were talking about the Trailblazers, right? And that sort of what they should be going for, right, is the Trailblazers model. And I think that there's a lot to that. I think that the Trailblazers are doing... what the Lakers should have done post Pau Gasol, right? So instead of losing LaMarcus Aldridge, they lost Pau Gasol, right? So like what they would think to themselves, right, is like, okay, you know, time to try to put it all together here and just get a whole bunch of young guys who have upside, who we can either turn into trade pieces, like we said, or who we can turn into really solid, good players, sort of like the Celtics-style rebuild, because unlike the Trailblazers and the Celtics, they have a much higher likelihood of getting that star player that those two teams are looking for to sort of fill them out. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but then there's the Kobe problem.
But Kobe's on his way out.
Yeah, but if they had started the rebuild earlier, then you run into the Kobe problem. Just Kobe doesn't want to lose in his last years.
But I think that the Celtics and the Trailblazers are both looking at maybe getting into the playoffs. Oh, well, that's a thought, right? Is that maybe they would have been too good. Okay, so going into next season, I hope that they start a Trailblazers/Celtics-esque rebuild. I mean, I hope that they get Hassan Whiteside, but...
Oh, man, that I want... Yeah, they get Whiteside.
Yeah.
I think Whiteside is... I don't know, from what I can see, I feel like Whiteside is really looking for a situation where he can be put on a big stage and be...
Yeah.
That guy.
He's a showboater, right?
Yeah. And you know, LA is in serious need of refinding their... What's the word? Mojo, we will, if you will. Their identity, their
right.
Kind of... Yeah, their whatever.
I like mojo.
Yeah, I know, it's sort of tedious, but yeah, their mode or whatever. I feel like there would be nothing better for that team than for them to reorient themselves along the lines of a very run-and-gun team, because I feel like basketball as a whole, the league as a whole, is healthier when there is an exciting and,
right.
And you know, an exciting team, at least, in the Lakers.
And
they just
Hassan Whiteside could totally be a Shaq-type guy. You know, Hassan Whiteside reminds me a lot of Shaq.
Yeah, I mean, you know, or at least with characteristic restraint, you give your opinion there with the...
But...
I'm joking about the restraint thing. You usually make comparisons like, this guy's like Shaq.
Anyways,
which is...
Okay, Shaqian. So... Okay, so you guys know block percentage, right?
Yes.
The percentage of shots that a player blocks... All five players on offense counted,
yeah.
But minus 3-point shots, you know?
Mm.
Okay, so guess what Hassan Whiteside's block percentage is?
Really high.
Okay, when Hassan Whiteside is on the court, he blocks 11% of 2-point shots. 11% of shots taken by anyone on the opposing team are blocked by Hassan Whiteside when he's on the court. That is nuts. That is nearly twice as much as Anthony Davis, who's number two.
Is that how it's calculated? I thought it was calculated by shots that are taken within 5 feet of you.
No, it's calculated
really?
By...
Oh, that is... Yeah. Okay, yeah, wow. That is really... Wow. Well, I mean, we all knew Hassan Whiteside was good.
Yeah, that's... He also that's doesn't... incredible.
Compelling argument.
Anyways, yeah, so on the whole Hassan Whiteside thing, did you know that the Miami Heat are holding opposing teams to the fifth lowest three-point shooting percentage in the league out of all teams? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Wait, I think that I saw that they were doing something like that on the NBA game break, but...
Yeah.
Are you using this as evidence of the top-to-bottom structural robustness of their defense rather than trying to pin it all on Whiteside's interior game? Are you saying that they also have good perimeter defense, too?
No. I'm saying that Hassan Whiteside has a amplified version of the Dwight Howard effect,
right,
where... Not only do people not want it, since he blocks shots even from long-range twos, right?
Mm-hmm.
People will resort to questionable three-point jump shots, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if he's switched on, quote-unquote, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what the opposing offense is relegated to, and that's why that percentage is so low, even though they have Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade, who are not exactly stellar perimeter defenders, when Hassan is either not on the court or when he is not switched on, right? You know, he'll go for blocks that he can't get, and the defense will sort of collapse and stuff. But more importantly, the three-point shooting will normalize. So that super low percentage is sort of a function of that, like, regular... percentage shots where it's like just an average three-point defense when like he's either not on or not playing to his potential, and then when he is, it's so low that it sort of averages out. Anyways, that's sort of my theory. I haven't read anything to that extent, but I've watched more Miami Heat games than any other team, except for the Mavericks, probably, and that's my impression. So, Speaking of Mavs...
I'm looking at their opponent stats per game right now, trying to see if anything like that jumps out at me. I mean, nothing in the stats would really bear it out unless we looked at shot charts for the other team, which I guess I could be bothered to do that. I'm not really doing anything productive right now anyway.
Well,
if I can find
it. I don't know.
I'm not trying to prove you right or wrong. I'm just interested right. Because that's a good point. And, you know, the more you look at stats, the more likely something is going to pop out of you. I mean, I don't know. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a little bit of an advanced stats wizard, and that's seriously my...
slight wizard. I get that.